Folks, you're listening to the John DePietro Show. Weekdays, we start at 11. We go until 2. It's AM 1380, 99.9 FM. You can always listen online at our website, DePietro.com. It's time for our segment, Politics This Week. Joining us, he is the managing editor, AnchorRising.com. It is Justin Katz. And Justin, I want to start off our conversation this as we're learning more. It's actually kind of comical. The financing for the Tidewater Soccer Stadium, it defies logic other than it has nothing to do with, as you and I have really talked about, but to me, it has nothing to do with the interest of soccer. I'll even say, okay, it's a different idea. It's a novel idea. You don't want to do a minor league baseball team. Maybe there's some interest, but $10,000 stadium, but the financing of how much the state is actually going to put into bonds in order to come up with the $27 million, and the costs continue to skyrocket. It is, well, it got national attention with Bloomberg writing about it. And it's hard to fathom that this is actually, this whole project, you know, continues to move forward.
Well, it is. And I think it's one of those things that everybody knows, just everybody knows. It's not about soccer. It's not about even economic development. It's about the politics of it. It's about paying off the unions. It's about creating an opportunity for high yield, very safe bonds for insider investors and banks. That's what it's about. And it becomes comical because everybody knows when these things are announced, this is going to be more expensive than you think. And you're taking a lot of risk when you agree to these things that things will get worse. And they have. Interest has gotten worse than people expected. And the problem with government is the people involved making the decisions have no skin in the game. What's the worst that happens to McKee? Right. He doesn't get reelected. Whatever. You know, he keeps going on. He'll keep, if he plays his cards right, he'll get some slush from the unions for what they'll keep gathering. The union heads won't have any trouble at all taking the money. Everybody's bought in. The media will never catch on because they don't want to start going after the unions. And so that's what's really frustrating about it. You get these moments of opportunity for clarity. It's like when the sun pokes through the clouds at the end of the perfect storm and the boat sinks anyway. You know, that's kind of what it is. You get this impression of, wow, that's, we're paying four times the cost of the money we're giving them. That doesn't make much sense. But then everybody goes about their lives because nobody wants to really dig into it. And it's why we ought to avoid these problems, particularly with property values as they are. I mean, we've locked up this area now for this project that's going to take a lot of taxpayer funds. And guess what? That's not going to be anywhere we can put, say, housing on that property. You know, it's just the whole mentality of going after of these projects is completely wrong. And it'd be nice if our politicians had to start at least offering some explanation for their thinking.
What was interesting about this, and a lot of people actually are busy and they don't pay attention to all the details, but this was supposed to be initially, it was going to revitalize the whole area. But you go back to that, it was July of 2022. McKee had the primary in September, and they had the Commerce Board meeting where, to me, they leveraged some people not to vote, and then he was the deciding vote. But as I have talked about, and you and I have talked about, that was the same day that Governor McKee received the endorsement from the AFL-CIO, and George Knee sat next to him at the Commerce Board meeting and voted for this project. Justin, it was a conflict of interest. But my question to you is, do you think, could the Republican Party do more to shine a light and really go to town on this? Like, that's a blatant conflict of interest. This is not about a soccer stadium. It's giving to me organized labor in the unions that just gave them a huge expensive project, $150 million to $200 million project. But could the Republican Party at least go after them on it?
Well, you know, I think they can and they should, although, you know, the media could too, right? And I think the fact that the media is not means that Republicans might not get a lot of traction going after it. And what's really needed is for somebody to dig in, to trace all the money, to make it really clear and obvious and easy to understand for, as you mentioned, people are busy. Just make it easy to understand. So when they look at this eye-popping number, you're financing this at four times the cost of your principal. You know, when people see that, they say, wait, that doesn't look right. There has to be an easy next step. And that is because X, Y, Z. And then that's how you build the story. The problem we have, and the Republicans are sort of the knife's edge of this, but it's a broader problem for all of Rhode Island, is we don't have the institutional incentive for somebody to spend that time, to take that risk of time and effort, digging in, doing really, it's not always easy to understand how these deals are working, who's connected to whom, who's actually profiting. That takes time to work out and explain and develop. And there's just not any, our media won't do it because they don't want to find the rot that they would if they dug into it. And there's nobody with the concentrated interest to fund such a thing. And there are only so many people who can be volunteers. And I've seen a huge drop off in that sort of volunteerism in Rhode Island. I mean, 15 years ago, there were competing organizations, good government organizations. I mean, there were more than one, and they were all trying to outdo themselves with their good government activity. They're all gone, all of them, except I guess you could say the Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity, but they're kind of more into a podcast now. You know, there's not a lot of material being generated in that regard, and that's a big problem. And I think the Republicans should make a big deal out of this, but I just don't know how much effort they're able to pull into it, and how much it's really worth it for them if the media is just going to ignore them anyway.
I just mentioned them simply because there's no business community seemingly that is pushing back. Now, Justin, Peter Alviti, a member of the McKee administration and a third person, they were at the State House last week. This was the oversight hearing. I think it took about 3 hours. I'm curious to hear some of your thoughts on how you think that went.
Well, I think Dan McGowan took him to task over it, rightly so. Yes. I mean, it was kind of the same. It was interesting that you could say Alviti showed more empathy than Governor McKee has shown for the problems this is causing. And that's true. And Dan McGowan does say that. And then as McGowan goes on to say, but everything else is a problem. And the problem is we've got this situation where the top guy, the governor, is worse than the bad DOT director, who's just being evasive, who isn't really offering answers. And, you know, this was horrible and I'm sorry, but hey, we've done everything else we've done is perfectly good. And we're doing so well with all the other bridges. And that's a line that shouldn't work. But again, it's very much like the Tidewater issue. Nobody wants to dig into it. Nobody wants to go to that next step. I mean, even McGowan, didn't go there. I mean, we need to start asking, is there something structurally wrong here? You know, I think that's part of the problem. You get these people like Alviti and even McKee out there in a hearing, and they're just answering questions for a while, and they're evasive, and they're this and they're that, and we blame them. And it's almost like our elections are just a way to choose our scapegoats or the people who are going to have to go through that gauntlet. But we need to ask, is there something structurally wrong here? Does something have to be done with the structure of the way we do policy and our workforce and all of that? And is there some blame to fall on Rhode Island voters and the way we vote? I mean, this is not a new problem. Alviti has just inherited. I mean, at least maybe he's sincere that he's up late at night and wakes up in the morning all stressed out. And kind of I hope he is. And, you know, that's fine. That's a kind of a baseline minimum. But we really have to start digging in and saying, what are the real problems? And so a legislative hearing, you know, what the people asking the questions are part of the problem. You know, so we're in this hard situation where everybody we've tasked to fix the problems has an interest in not fixing the problems. And that's what strikes me during these kind of show hearings where the person goes out there and isn't answering the right questions because the right questions aren't being asked.
The Representative Mike Chippendale, Representative John Breen, Solomon, I mean, they did sit there and answer questions for 3 hours. Was there anyone that you thought made any headway, or you think anyone was going down the right path?
Well, look, I mean, I know from the hearings and from social media as well and other statements from those, like the Republicans and the independents that you've mentioned, Brian and Chippendale and others, they've got their heads in the right place, but they're not, you know, what's frustrating is they're not really gaining traction, and they're not really, you know, they'll ask some questions, they can be batted away. I think Ken Block had a good good commentary on LVD's appearance on radio, I think it was, where, you know, the key line from Ken Block was that he answers questions in a way that seem plausible on the surface to busy people who don't know what he's talking about. But if you, the moment you dig into it, you get nowhere. And so or it's phony or fake or just fluff. And I think that's the kind of the attitude I have with these hearings is you need the, you know, the Republicans will sit there and it's almost like the show of politics, right? They go around the table and everybody gets to say something and maybe you make the guy uncomfortable and you score a point. But there's no follow up. You need the chairman, you need the Speaker of the House, you need the Senate president to be the one saying, Mr. Alvedi, is there something more serious going on here? You know, that's what I mean when I say the questions aren't being asked is I guess they're not being asked by the right people. Otherwise, it's just a show and it goes out there. He might as well just go on the radio and answer a couple callers who ask tough questions, you know, so it's because nobody with any authority is actually going to do anything about it.
Folks, quick break. Much more ahead. Politics This Week, Justin Katz, right here on the John DePietro Show.
The Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln. Lunch, dinner, drinks in the lounge, especially this time of year. So much going on. They always have a nice crowd right there. Full bar, large dining area right there in the lounge. Easy to get to, whether it's lunch or dinner. A great meal is waiting for you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery. Think of this, since 1994, that's right, celebrating the big anniversary this year, I'll see you at the Lodge Pub and Eatery, 40 Breakneck Hill Road in Lincoln.
Our segment is Politics This Week. With us is Justin Katz, Managing Editor, AnchorRising.com. Justin, I want to stay on Ken Block. For those that are, I think a lot of people are familiar with him. He's run for governor. He ran in 2010 on the Moderate Party, unsuccessful. 2014, he lost to the primary, Alan Funk. He's very knowledgeable. Been very outspoken about some of the things that were going on at Warwick. He has a new book out regarding he was, in fact, involved. He knows a lot about how to find fraud, computer analysis. What is your, I think it's an interesting dynamic that he has ventured in to this area regarding the bridge. And granted, he's using his platform of social media, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts. You know, Ken is very well researched. He's been around. He's not an elected official, but I am curious to hear more of your thoughts on Ken Block trying to get involved with this whole bridge fiasco.
Well, Ken's an interesting character, and I admire a lot of what he does, and his head's in the right place. I mean, he is analytical. He is will follow logic. I think he and I probably disagree on a lot of you know, basic social and political foundations, but. You know, so he does get upset when people are lying and cheating, and that's all a good thing. But I think what's interesting is he did put a lot of effort into, you know, as you indicated, he started a party, ran for governor, he even compromised and ran as a Republican, right? I mean, and that's something that a lot of people who are kind of in their gut Democrats just wouldn't do because they bought into the partisan lines. I mean, he tried to push some of those good government groups I mentioned earlier. And so he's been involved, but what's frustrating is as you say, he's working on social media. You know, he's a guy with a lot of talent and a lot of money for himself, and he can only do so much, right? It's what we need is a whole bunch of people with kind of, it shouldn't be so rare that somebody with some level of analytical skills like Ken is digging into this and commenting on it. There ought to be columns, right? We don't, once upon a time, he would have been writing a monthly or weekly column for the Providence Journal, which everybody in the state would have read, right? That's or everybody who's involved in politics would have read. And that doesn't exist anymore. And I think that's what's part of the frustration and the problem we face is there just isn't, it's not even that we don't have enough Ken Blocks, it's that we don't have enough support when we do have a Ken Block. And I think that's part of it. But I think the way he digs in and actually looks at the truth of the matter, you know, saying, well, Alvedi said there was paint on this from when they painted the other bridge, but that's impossible. There are so many rafters or girders between them, etc. You know, just those sorts of clear-eyed explanations. It's good that there's a Twitter out there, but it's such a siloed medium that ought to be more broadly known. But there's just not the media or information infrastructure in the state to do that anymore.
They're really not. You're right. And if anything, you know, in some ways, he uses social media the way people used to read the Providence Journal. People send me stuff he posts on Facebook. I wish there was more of the business community kind of galvanizing behind him, because he's really could almost serve as the voice of the Providence Chamber of Commerce if we actually had one instead of someone that's kind of in cahoots with them. I'll just finally say this about these oversight hearings, Justin. To me, this was about they wanted to send LVD up there to basically get beat up for 3 hours and just keep saying he's sorry. And I have said, I think it's irrelevant whether or not he's sorry. Like, that should have no bearing. I don't care if he's crying or snarky about it. The situation is the situation. But if McKee was serious about being a leader, he should have walked in there and sat next to him and taken the bows and arrows for 3 hours. But other than that, they didn't offer. They just kept saying, we don't have that. The engineers have that. We don't have that. And it was like, you just have to kind of get pummeled for 3 hours. Now, Justin, I also want to get your thought. This was a story that I believe, and folks, again, our segment is Politics This Week. In Rhode Island, the Republican Party just won't embrace this issue. I have no idea why. Nothing against it. I said to Gary Leonard, try to make immigration an issue in the CD1 race, wouldn't do it. The Republican Party, Susie Yankee, they never will touch it. But Fox did a story how an illegal from Guatemala who is a felony child molester was arrested. ICE was aware of him, contacted the ACI, put a holder on him, and said, do not let that person go. And then, you know, the ACI under the McKee administration let him go, but then ICE was able to grab him. Now they have him in their custody. People suddenly started sparking up because it became suddenly a national story and Fox picked up on it. And by the way, ICE put out a press release. They were so upset about it. But I want to get your thoughts on what is it that our local media, you can't find any stories on this, whether it's 10, 12, the Journal, and basically there's no talk about it at the Rhode Island State House.
Well, I think they're all scared. I mean, it cuts right to the heart of their sore points where they've been whipped and sometimes self-flagellated on this kind of progressive ideology. It's really become like a mental illness, and you could almost picture the people at the ACI like, "Yeah, let's don't call ICE. That's we don't do that around here because they're all MAGA Republican type people." I mean, I'm just imagining it, but that's the culture that I think permeates a lot of our institutions here, and that also permeates the news media. They don't want to find that there's a problem with an open border for 3 years. They just don't want to find it. And in part because they all, I think, deep down know that this is on the whole, this is a benefit to their party, the Democrat Party. On the whole, this is going to create new opportunities for government services, which is what they think everything ought to be organized around. And so they don't want to disrupt the boat, right? It's almost like sometimes you'll see the stories on social media about, say, the transgender activist who was just arrested for child molestation. You don't see those stories either because they don't want it to be part of the story. They want it to be, that's just that'll happen now and then, but that's not representative. That's just, you know, a fluke. So don't give that any air. And I think that's what we see here, but it's not a fluke. I mean, we also had the story of the three women and the guy and the dead baby, and they tried to skip the state before the funeral. I mean, that's two stories in a week. So we're not talking about just this isolated, that was a strange one. Well, put that aside. That's not going to happen again. When we don't want to give any ammo to the crazy racists on the right, you know, that, and I think that attitude is just so dangerous. But, you know, it's not unlike the unwillingness to dig into the Washington Bridge fiasco. Good right. Point. It's not, I mean, there are these places they will not go because we've reached the point that everybody with power in the state is aligned on these kind of core progressive and labor union issues, and they can't step out of it because what's going to happen? They'll be relegated to the hinterlands, like me or you. You know, don't be like those people. You know, you're one of us. You know, I think that's the attitude there is, and it's going to be increasingly dangerous if they don't, because you'll keep people will pick up on this fact, and they'll start to ask questions like, hey, why have I not heard about this? And there's nothing worse, I think, for kind of the cascade, what's called the preference cascade, where everybody suddenly realizes they've been lying to, everybody's been lying to each other. Where when you start digging into it and you go, oh, wow, that was strange that they let that guy go. And then you do a little bit of searching and you come across the story of the baby killing family. And then, oh, wait, that's weird. And then there's going to be another one and then another. And then it starts to unravel. And I think that's where, in some ways it's hopeful because people's minds can change if they discover that thread. But on the other hand, it'd be a lot better and a lot more stable for our entire community if we would just honestly address these problems and the positives and negatives. Hey, if we conclude we still want Providence to be a sanctuary city, then, you know, that's up to the voters there, but they should have full information as they're making the decisions.
Yeah. I think that's a red herring only because, Justin, what I look at it is it's unenforced laws. If you have a road where people can drive 90 miles an hour, and then you say to the, you know, the police, what's the speed limit there? And, oh, 55. But if it's not enforced, then it might as well be 90 miles an hour. If someone were to say to Governor McKee, is this a sanctuary state? Oh, no, we're not a sanctuary state. But when you have across the board that they don't cooperate with ICE and they allow it to operate as a sanctuary state, then that's you basically are one, whether or not you're acknowledging it. You also had the 14-year-old girl in Cranston walking to Cranston East, 10 of 8 in the morning, and a guy tried to grab her speaking Spanish. You look at the photo. There's another one. I mean, it's rampant, but it's the unenforced law, which to me is the equivalent of almost like, you know, not having one, even though if then put to the test, there's no difference. I want to leave it at this for the break. If someone is arrested and they happen to be illegal, there's no difference the way they're treated. Like they'll all say, oh, you know, Providence might be, but there's no difference the way they're treated in Providence or Central Falls or Pawtucket or Warwick or Warren or Tiverton. It's all the same across the board. So they are actually running one, but they will just, if a microphone's put in front of them, they would say, oh no, we don't do that. Folks, quick break, much more ahead. Politics This Week, Justin Katz, right here on the John DePietro Show.
Propane Plus, call them today. Heating and cooling in Rhode Island, 401-885-4209 in Massachusetts, 508-252-3359 for Propane Plus. Three generations you can always depend on Propane Plus for all your heating and cooling. Call them today, 401-885-4209. Three generations, they're available 24/7 for service and delivery, and they're going to serve you for a very long time. They have a great user-friendly website. You just log on at propaneplus.com. And then you type in your zip code, residential, commercial, Propane Plus, heating and cooling, always there for you. Give them a call today in Rhode Island, 401-885-4209. In Massachusetts, 508-252-3359. The Johnson family, three generations, heating and cooling. You can always depend on Propane Plus.
Our segment is Politics This Week with us, Justin Katz, managing editor at AnchorRising.com. Justin, Channel 6, they've had their struggles. I see some of the people out there. They've really had heavy turnover in the past couple of years, especially the last year. I don't even see a lot of their reporters out there. Sometimes they do, but most of the time it's just a faux talk. But suddenly on Friday, they kind of ignored by local media. And suddenly on Friday, they're getting a lot of attention. And suddenly it was because Kelly Bates, who's ended up there, has announced that she's going to try to unionize the people at Channel 6, who I'm just curious your thought. To me, there was an excitement almost in local media, like, look at that. That's great. They're going to – has nothing to do with product or where they do in the ratings, which has really fallen. There was suddenly excitement about them, not for peace that they did, but just because they were maybe going to unionize.
Yeah, it looked to me like – the sign of the end of ABC 6 News in Rhode Island. I mean, that,
yeah,
that a union will put that network, that station, out of business. That's all there is to it. I mean, they're not producing. They already generate less content than their right. competitors. It's not like this is growth. I mean, we periodically talk about the union's attempts to organize the coffee shops. And that I think in that case it's a bad thing as well. But at least there, it's kind of a growth industry, right? There's some argument that if unions can organize growth industries, then at least they'll ensure that some of the growth goes to the working staff and doesn't get sucked up by investors or the bosses or all that. There's at least a case to be made. In this case, you're talking about a declining business model and a declining network. And I think when that unionizes, it almost feels like, well, we're going to put some stakes in the ground. So when the investors and the businesses, the corporation, move out of this business or try to pull out of this business, we can at least grab some stuff from them on their way out. I mean, that's what it starts to feel like. There's no, you know, you hear we're organizing. Oh, well, all right. But what have you been doing to make it grow? I mean, shouldn't that be kind of first? Maybe start putting out some new stuff. I mean, when you're in that situation, when you're in a situation where you're the third in the market, a small market in a declining business model, you've got to innovate. What you need is people saying, you know what, I know I'm not getting paid as much as I should, but I believe in this place. I want to help build it. And so I'm going to do extra work. I'm not going to follow a contract. I'm not going to try to force you to give me more days off. I'm going to try to make this work. And that's kind of what I think an organization in ABC6's situation needs. And they're getting the opposite. I think it really does indicate a be careful who you hire kind of message, because if you bring in somebody to your declining business who says, hey, I'm here to organize, you're in real trouble.
I think it'll be the death knell. They may just pull the plug and then there is no local, you know, local news. They could just then start to run like Boston News and so forth. Speaking of, when you mentioned, it is kind of funny, Justin, like kind of the cool kids table, everything goes back to high school. I said to you, you know, Joe Paolino, who has that program on ABC6 on Sunday mornings. But this week's guest is Pat Crowley. You can kind of see where then someone hits the circuit where they're on Newsmakers, they're on Lively Experiment, now they're on Paolino. It's kind of like who's in, who's out. And Crowley, who by all accounts, I mean, you and I, we know his reputation. He's now made it as like the acceptability of that he gets to appear. And it's polar opposites. It's really remarkable that someone like Joe Paolino, who, you know, still tries to run a family-run business, and that then having someone who, up to him, he would, you know, put every private business out of business.
Oh, sure. And I mean, I'm speculating a little bit here, but I have a feeling if you dug through Pat Crowley's past products, things he's written or said, I'm sure you'll find some things where he painted Joe Paolino as a right-wing lunatic and the danger to the working people of Rhode Island. But, you know, he's worked his way through labor, and labor in Rhode Island has no concern for how it appears anymore. And that's his elevation kind of proves that. And so, you know, in fairness to Joe Paolino and all the rest, Crowley is a significant player in Rhode Island. I mean, I don't like it, and I think it's horrible for the state, but it's a fact. And, you know, it's sort of like the devil doesn't just knock you over. He makes you do a dance in your own skin and smile while he tortures you. And that's I think what we're going to be seeing to anybody in Rhode Island media who has any suspicions about organized labor as the likes of Pat Crowley take charge. And I think it ties right back again to why nobody wants to dig into the real reasons we have infrastructure problems or education problems or immigration problems, because they know if they start digging into this, if they start treating Pat Crowley as something other than the nice local union head, they'll be out of a job or worse, they could be run out of the state. So I think that's got to be on all their minds. And I hope secretly they're taking actions to adjust their behavior and maybe make some positive change for the state. But I don't think so. I think everybody's just probably going to hold on to their positions for dear life.
It's kind of like being admitted to like a club or a private club or a country club. Like, welcome to the, you know, welcome. Justin, some of the headlines. Providence City Council hires former East Providence clerk who fabricated a resume. Of all the people that would maybe love a job like this, It is it defies reason. I am glad the Boston Globe reported on it. This woman fabricated a resume, was fired from East Providence, and then suddenly, boom, here she is, that she's going to be hired by the Providence City Council.
Yeah, it does make you wonder who she knows, right? I mean, why would they even take the risk of hiring somebody who's gotten attention for that sort of thing? I will say it, I having not really dug into the story, and I don't think anybody has necessarily gotten all the details, but I will say I've been in some situations in government and other private sector organizations where you look at somebody who's been hired and ask why, and the answer is honest and genuine of you should have seen the other options. And so there's always
Sure.
that
Good
possibility that
point. Good
there's
point.
just nobody else to do it. But then again, that's the kind of thing we ought to know, right? It shouldn't just be quietly hire somebody who's obviously got potential to be controversial. I mean, if that's the case, we need to start knowing why are you hiring people like this? Is it because there is nobody else out there? And I think that's perhaps a story we haven't heard yet.
Anyone that wonders if the teachers' union's power has been diminished. Students and parents pack a school board meeting trying to save their high school. Police were called to the meeting. Justin, no one focuses on the fact that it's the school is under capacity, totally underperforming. They're just going to send the kids instead of getting on the bus and going left, they're going to get on the bus and go right. Instead, the story becomes police were called, these parents are rallying. You and I both know it's the same playbook. This is all the union because they're afraid that means. The teachers, many of the staff that work at the school would lose their job. That's really the motivating factor here.
It is. Well, I think to your first point, one of the great lines I've saw was one of the teachers saying, "Many of my students call this a second home." Okay, well, you're saying that, but where are they? So you're right. It's the union line, and I think it's almost more, I think, than just having the teachers in that school lose their jobs and having the union lose that little bit of leverage. I think it's more than that. I think it comes down to accountability. They do not want there to be any, and having fought for school choice for quite a bit in the last de decade, that's what the school choice movement's all about, is accountability. You can lose your school if you're not competitive, because we can't keep kids in a failing school. So we'll try to take it over. If you can't get your act together, then we're going to have to close you. That's what it comes down to. The school was failing, and you got to close it at some point. You've got to be able to just pull the plug and say, "Look, you're not performing. This isn't working. We got to find something else." Every year, there are kids entering and exiting this school system. We can't tie them up while you pretend you're going to try to get your act together in the future. And I think that's what it comes down to. They don't want there to be any accountability. They want it to just be a jobs program, just money flowing through. If we
That's
fail,
right.
it means you didn't give us enough money. So I
Yeah.
failed, give me more money. I think that's the attitude they want to cultivate, and I think that's what this is. And you don't get those questions, and we come right back to the everybody involved being in on the game, and so you don't get those that sort of questioning from the news media, like, "Well, wait a second, what do you think should be the consequences?" And every now and then, people will talk about Massachusetts' wonderful schools. I think they're on a decline, but they're still, number one or so in the country by many measures. Part of their reform from the 90s was real strict accountability. If you're failing, we're going to do standardized testing. It's not just the standardized testing just so we can all gawk at you and say you're failing. It's if you're failing, the state will take you over, or somebody else will take you over. Kids get to start choosing and leaving your school, and you lose money, and that's going to be a problem for you. So you have to succeed. That's part of what makes a system work, and it's completely lacking in government. And what we're getting in Rhode Island now, as the labor unions completely take over the state, is exactly that. Well, you can't close a school. I don't care if there's one child getting an F in every subject in that school. You got to keep every single teacher employed. There can be no accountability whatsoever. And I think that's the real underlying message there.
Folks, again, our segment of politics this week, he is Justin Katz, managing editor, anchorrising.com. Justin, excellent job as always, and we'll talk to you again.
Thank you, John. I'll talk to you soon.
All your oil needs, make it Henry Oil. Call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Reliable, affordable fuel oil delivery. Call Henry Oil today. Fuel oil, diesel, gasoline delivery? It's Henry Oil, residential, commercial, fuel oil delivery since 1947. They also have budget plans, service contracts, lock and cap pricing. You can depend on Henry Oil. Call them today, 401-521-0200. Serving most of Rhode Island and southeastern Mass. We got a long way to go with winter. Make sure that tank is filled. Call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. Henry Oil, a local family-run business since 1947 that you can depend on. For all your oil needs, call Henry Oil today, 401-521-0200. You're listening to the John DePietro Show on Friday night. I was actually up in the northern part of the state, Burville Police. I heard about that, and then I heard the be on the lookout for this guy. Now, we have the video up on our Facebook page, John DePietro Show. Channel 12 also, they got a hold of it. Let me just quickly play. They have
accused of resisting arrest, quick clip. Driving his car that was about to get towed, and dragging two Burville police officers. The officers were injured, and that suspect drove off. This all started on Friday night with a traffic stop. The suspect is 29-year-old Tyler Perry of Woonsocket, according to police there. On Saturday, authorities executed a search warrant at his home in Woonsocket. They found the car, but not him. Again, the suspect is still at large, and police are calling this a very active investigation.
You know, that guy better turn himself in. But Friday night, we were out doing on the scene live stream, and we heard about, if you've seen the video, it's very frightening as he suddenly is trying to get in the car. There's two of them, and he's 29-year-old Tyler Perry. And the next thing you know, he's able to get into the car, start it, and then get it in drive. And that could have ended very, very badly, as a matter of fact. So this Tyler Perry, police executed the search warrant, Green Street in Woonsocket. He was not home. That guy better turn himself in. He better turn himself in before they find him and then end up. And then it's going to come out that way. So now also yesterday, there's that Woonsocket man. He was involved with a robbery in Bellingham. They caught him in Lowell on Saturday night. They found him. Agapetito Davila. Wonder what his immigration status is. I'm going to try to find out.
Story we first brought you last weekend here on 12 News. Police confirm they now have the man in custody accused of an armed robbery in Bellingham, who then allegedly crashed his car in Woonsocket and fled the scene there. 41-year-old Agapito Davila was arrested last night in Lowell. He's facing charges in both Rhode Island and Massachusetts.
Rhode Island and Massachusetts. I don't think English is his first language.
Connection to that incident. No word yet, though, on when exactly he'll be in court.
I will follow up with Chief Oates, in Woonsocket. Very, very dangerous. Very, very dangerous individual, as a matter of fact. He was considered armed and dangerous on the run. And they were, basically warning anyone, be careful of him. Now, Lynn also has a very large illegal population. Folks, do you see the trend here? Do you see the trend that all of this crime that is being committed? Do you see the trend where no one gets deported? You know what else is? Rhode Island has a huge population of people from the Dominican. The Dominican Republic, they go back and forth. But what people need to also recognize, boy, that guy wanted the Woonsocket Bellingham robbery. I'm telling you, he's here illegally. Agapito Davila. Here's how you spell his name. Agapito. Agapito Davila, 41 of Woonsocket. Brought to Bellingham for booking. He robbed Bellingham Beer and Wine at gunpoint. Saturday, February 10th, the night before the Super Bowl, 6:45 at night. Jumped out of the stolen car he was driving, ran off as the unoccupied vehicle, which hit two parked cars, continued rolling. Firearms, armed robbery, motor vehicle. He's another one. I'll find out from Chief Oates, but I'm willing to bet that willing to bet he also is not supposed to be here. I hope people are starting to recognize and understand exactly what is happening here, which is this is a full assault, and no one is seemingly doing anything about it. Now, on social media, I did notice suddenly some of the Rhode Island Republicans are waking up, and suddenly many of them are starting to say, hey, wait a minute. Maybe this is something that we should be talking about. Maybe this shouldn't be going on. Maybe maybe that's not the way that people, I'm telling you, that's not what people want. But I'm also, and it's very expensive as well. Another area that no one gets into is, just think of in Providence. So you have 100,000 illegals in the state, 10% of the population. Primarily Providence, Pawtucket, Central Falls, but then you have, they're also in Woonsocket. They're also in, right in the Cumberland, Central Falls line. They're also in West Warwick. Then there's some down in the Newport area, primarily. But if you just take, send one of those children to school. Let's say there's four children, and they're all here with their parents illegally. So those four kids that attend a Providence public school where no one is speaking English. So just do the math on that. That's $80,000 a year, minimum, by the way. Then they all, they get free lunch, they get free breakfast. $80,000, that's just one family. I think we could round it up to an even, plus gas for the bus and so forth. So that's, one family is $100,000 a year. That's just four kids. So when you start doing the math, there's 17,000 students in the Providence public schools. At least half are illegal. So that's 8,000 students at $20,000 a year. Then you go into Pawtucket. In Central Falls, it's closer to 75%. So all illegal. None of them paying taxes. So you can see where this starts to go into the millions of how much this is costing. And I think a big, something that needs to be examined that no one, I don't hear anyone talk about, is the people from the Dominican Republic. That they say, oh no, I live in Rhode Island, and they get EBT cards, they send their kids to school. They go back and forth. They have family, they go back and forth in Dominican. I hear from Providence teachers, Pawtucket, Central Falls, a lot of these Dominican kids, they disappear for January, February. They come back in March because it's too cold up here. They leave right around Christmas time, then come back for the spring, the hair, and the summertime, and the fall, and so forth. But they're not supposed to be here, and they cram into the apartments, and they take all our benefits, and they go, they considered, and then if you're living in the Dominican, and your cousin or someone you know or so forth, it's great. They don't bother you in Rhode Island, and you fly right into TF Green. And then you get all the benefits, and they get all the free phones, and then they get the free cards, and their kids go to the schools, and they're kind of seen as like the elite. And then they bounce back and forth. It's not like they never see their people or family again. And then the more of them move over, they have more of a kind of plant their flag, and you can see where this thing really spirals. And finally, let's hope someone will start to speak up. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. AJ, drywall, plaster, home improvement, call them today for a free quote. You can also find them on Facebook, 401-323-9252. 323-9252. AJ, drywall, plasters, home improvement, frame to finish basements. What a difference it'll make in your basement. Acoustic ceilings. Look how beautiful your ceiling could be. New homes, additions. Also, commercial rehabs, painting, remodeling. Contact them today. It's a family-run business. AJ Drywall Plaster Home Improvements. Call for a free quote. What a difference they'll make in your home, your ceilings, floors, basements. 401-323-9252. What a difference. Beautiful walls and ceilings. 401-323-9252. You can also find them on Facebook. It's AJ Drywall Plaster and Home Improvements for your home or business. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. Well, what a weekend. Rhode Island under the gun. Rhode Island, as a matter of fact, national news coverage. Now, I did a TikTok on this. Folks, follow us on TikTok, John DePietro Show. And I sum up that right now we've had some pretty high-profile situations regarding illegal immigration in the state. Now, I want to be very clear about something. If you were to go up to anyone at the State House, Governor McKee, Matos, anyone like that, and say and ask them, are we running a sanctuary state? I'm telling you right now, they'd say, oh, no, absolutely not. Where they're disingenuous is we have unenforced laws. Rhode Island is, in fact, a sanctuary state. Now, I'll tell you why we're a sanctuary state. They don't want to announce that they are. But the reason that they are and how you can tell that we are is because they don't enforce immigration laws. So the state, and I'm sure Governor McKee is very happy saying, oh, no, no, we're not. But if you don't enforce immigration laws, then you might as well be. There are some other states that are a little more blatant and obvious than us, but absolutely they are. And I also want to point out that someone may say, well, you know, Providence might be, but the rest of the state is not. That's false. Illegals, people that are in the country illegally, thus in the state illegally, they're not treated any differently whether they're in Providence or another part of the state. If an illegal is arrested and stopped, whether it be in Providence or Pawtucket or Woonsocket or Central, they're all treated the same. Providence doesn't have a different set of rules. So people try to do a distraction. Oh, you know, maybe Providence is. No. It's a sanctuary state. Now, I did a compilation of this, and then there's a reason why this is truly in the news. And Fox News, you know, it's interesting. Fox News picked up on something. Now, the other local news are starting to pick up on it. But I talk about three high-profile examples. We have the little infant who was killed, strangled to death by his father in Pawtucket. And then over the weekend, the three women, the mother and the two other women living in the apartment, they were all grabbed by ICE. So you have that high profile. You have this was a Guatemalan child molester who, because of the McKee administration, the ACI ignored ICE and they let him go. And then ICE grabbed him again, and this time they're holding him. And then you also have the situation in Cranston. The police are still trying to find the illegal. They tried to rape a 14-year-old girl walking to school at Cranston East. So I want to play. This is, in fact, the TikTok that I did.
Controversy on Rhode Island, where seemingly illegals are running amok. Let's start with the first case. How about ICE? They're irate. It was a felony child molester from Guatemala. ICE said, do not release that guy. That Governor McKee, won't answer questions. Why was he released from state prison? We moved to Pawtucket. The community horrified. Little Santiago, 1 year old, strangled to death in his own home by that man, an illegal.
His father.
The death of the little boy. ICE involved in that case. They also detained, that's her, there's the mother. She's got immigration problems. These are two other women that are living in the apartment. This is all in Pawtucket. Then we move on to Cranston. Cranston police looking for this suspect. You guessed it, an illegal. What did he try to do? Rape a 14-year-old girl on her way to Cranston East. Police are searching for the suspect. It's a sanctuary state. Governor McKee basically running it into the ground. There he is. He's a close advisor to President Biden. We know what's going on at the border. ICE was irate that Guatemalan child molester released from the ACI prison. They said don't release the guy. Illegals running amok. First you have a bridge falling down, and now the people are under attack. Poor little Santiago. All of this going on in Rhode Island.
That's exactly right. Again, that is the TikTok. The situation, that was a felony child molester. Felony child molester, Guatemalan. And McKee, they let him go. Even though ICE said, do not let that guy go. Do not let that guy go. And they put a holder on him. And instead, they let him out. Why did they do that? Because under the McKee administration, they don't cooperate with ICE and federal authorities. The Guatemalan man, illegal in the U.S., arrested earlier this month, sexual assault minors in Rhode Island. Providence police first arrested him March of last year, felony child molestation. But then he was released. ICE said the ACI ignored its immigration detainer notice on orders from McKee and Matos. They called McKee, said let him go. Officials don't know when he entered the U.S. unlawfully. He was not inspected, admitted, paroled by an immigration official. So he now remains in custody while he awaits federal immigration judge. Now, over the weekend, those three women in Pawtucket, little Santiago, one-year-old boy, they got scooped up by ICE. Now, why? And they're being held at the Y Detention Center. Why did they do that? Because they don't trust the McKee administration. Folks, do you understand? And I want to be very clear. I am starting to see some hint that the Rhode Island Republican Party, the Republicans elected at the State House, that they're starting to pick up on the fact, hey, you know, maybe this is a problem. Maybe are people concerned about this? Maybe people are worried about this. They're absolutely concerned and worried about it. I'm glad. I mean, I want to be encouraging that they're actually starting to do something about it. It is out of control. But I want you to know that, because you're going to see, you might see, over the next several days or weeks or so forth, someone may put a microphone in front of Governor McKee or Matos or someone else and say, you know, are you concerned? We're not a sanctuary state. It's very simple. You know, police could say the speed limit on a certain road, nope, it's 35 miles an hour. And you say, you know, I live on that road. People are going like 70. Nope, 35. Well, if it's unenforced, then it's the equivalent of not having a speed limit. So the police can say the speed limit on the highway is 55. But if no one gets a ticket and people are allowed to drive 80 or 90, unenforced laws, well, then it's the equivalent of not even having a speed limit. And that's what happens in, just so you know, that's what happens in Rhode Island. I have people, oh, no, Governor McKee said we're not a sanctuary state. If you don't cooperate with ICE, and you don't cooperate with immigration officials, and you don't enforce the law, well, then it doesn't matter what laws you have on the books. It is the equivalent of not having any laws on the books. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. When it comes to insurance, you need a neighbor, a partner, and friend. You need Chapa Insurance Agency. They're located right on Reservoir Avenue in Cranston. Call today, free consultation, 401-900-INSU, 401-900-4678, Chapa Insurance, SIA. Steven, very experienced, whether it's auto, home, renters, business insurance, flood, recreational, umbrella, any other protection for your assets, Rhode Island and Massachusetts, Chapa Insurance Agency, your agency of choice. Call today, set up a meeting. They're so knowledgeable, can have everything under one roof. Call Chapa Insurance today, 401-900-INSU or 401-900-4678. Look for them on Facebook, again, located Reservoir Avenue in Cranston. Chapa Insurance Agency, your neighbor, your partner, your friend. One-stop insurance solutions. Follow On The Scene live stream. That's our Facebook live stream page. You can go to the website, DePietro.com. There's a link there. Or on Facebook, just find The John DePietro Show. That's where we do the On The Scene live stream. Follow all the action. Make sure you follow our Facebook page. You're listening to The John DePietro Show, Brockton High School. Brockton, Massachusetts. How bad is it? The school committee, they want to call in the National Guard. They had a press briefing. School seems completely out of control. I did a TikTok. You can follow our account on TikTok, John DePietro Show, or The John DePietro Show. Let's hear, this is the TikTok on Brockton High School.
Controversy, Brockton, Massachusetts. That's Brockton High School. How bad is the violence? Members of the school committee, they want the National Guard brought into Brockton to try to quell the violence. Teachers are afraid. Constant fights, open drug use. Some of the classrooms are used for sex. One teacher had his arm broken trying to break up a fight. Now, That's the Brockton police. How bad is the situation? Should they call in the National Guard? That's how bad the violence is. They also complain that people just go in and out of the school. There's no accountability. It certainly sounds like there's no learning going on either. But this is very dramatic that the school committee wants the governor, Governor Healey, governor of Massachusetts, there's Brockton, south of Boston, to call out the National Guard. Now, some parents complain that one of the problems is most of the teachers are white. 60% of the students are students of color, 20% Hispanic. Can you imagine how bad it is? The National Guard. Some parents don't even want police in the schools. In Brockton, Mass., they want the National Guard. What do you think? How would you feel if this was your school? What about if your children were attending the school? How severe would it be they have to call out the National Guard? Very serious situation at Brockton High School.
Now listen, a lot of schools may have some various disciplinary problems. This is another level when you have a situation where essentially the school committee, it's that bad. The teachers don't want to go in. The subs don't want to. Who wants to be there? It's not safe. And when you hear about some of the stories of what's going on, and that is, in fact, so the Brockton School Committee requests the National Guard to try to quell the violence. But the more that you learn about it, that was a track coach. He was trying to break up a fight, and he had his he got his arm broken. So he just said, I'm not going to coach anymore. It's not worth it. But you, several of the teachers, they have 3,500 students, and they just talk about how they fear for their safety. They're shoved, incredible disrespect. You know, these children don't have respect for the teachers because the parents don't have respect for the teachers. Now, some of the parents have said, well, you know, what do you see on the news is a bunch of white teachers crying, and then they show students that are black and brown. I mean, this is completely a total breakdown, pathetic, but it's getting more and more. There are more adults. They don't have respect for anyone. They don't have respect for, in fact, they don't have respect for, certainly not police, but they don't have respect for anyone, in essence, and authority. And then it kind of, you know, falls down. The guard members, they say, could act as substitute teachers and hall monitors. So now they didn't take any questions during this press conference. Now the mayor said, well, you know, that'd be up to Governor Healey, but the teachers are growing violence, misbehavior. Cliff Canavan's arm was broken, tried to break up a fight. He grew up in Brockton, graduated from Brockton High School, been a teacher for more than two decades, hasn't taught anywhere else. He wonders how much more he can take. So it was December 2022. His arm was broken, tried to break up a fight after school. He said it's only a matter of time that same day for someone gets, you know, seriously hurt or, God forbid, killed. So the conditions seemingly get worse. What also happens is fistfights that draw crowds, onlookers, open drug use, verbal harassment of faculty, and the kids go running down the hallway, and they all stand around and film these fights. 60% of the students are black, 20% are Hispanic. So some parents say, well, there's only one narrative being heard. So there's a lack of black educators. And most of the teachers are white. Only 20% identify as African American. And so one of the parents said, well, you know, the teachers are doing their best, but all you hear about and you see, we see one narrative. You see white female teachers crying, black and brown children fighting. Insanity. One school board, at a school board meeting, Sherry Mazzoli, administrative assistant, recounted being swept up by a crowd of students rushing down a hallway to watch and record a fight. She was pushed into a locker wall, was stepped on before her boss was able to pull her into a classroom. Unfortunately, staff now feels it's only a matter of time before someone dies in the hallway. And then you should see the guy's, you know, his arm was broken. And I think he was the female track coach. His arm was broken trying to break up a fight between two you know, two girls on the track team, or I'm not exactly sure who was involved with the altercation. Now, they also, so he was trying to stop a girl from attacking a member of his track team, which he was the coach. Two bones fractured in his forearm were shattered. He'll never regain full function of his arm. He decided to stop coaching. Now, they also cause problems at a lot of the surrounding businesses and communities, because then when school gets out, it is, you know, I know there's like a fast food place around there. I mean, it is just total mayhem and bedlam. But Brockton's not that far, you know, obviously, from where it is, southeastern Mass. You kind of have Taunton, Raynham. But what's intriguing is the element of, they're not talking about police. They're saying the National Guard. That is a complete breakdown. Now, what also should be pointed out that you don't hear anyone mention, but a big problem here that a number of people that, you know, as this story is being discussed, something that has to be part of the discussion, meaning you can't talk about this without also mentioning the fact that one of the problems that comes into play is, in fact, that it's the part that it changed in 2012. Hear me out. Where in 2012, expulsion is now the last possible means of kicking some, and it takes a lot to get someone, or a student, I should say, to that level. So that can't be ignored. A huge part of the problem is that the kids can't get thrown out. They cannot get expelled from school. Another problem you've heard, I mean, I've spoken with some school resource officers. They say the worst behave are the 14 and 15-year-olds because they don't want to be there anyway. But it was the 2012 state law, disciplinary measures, makes exclusion from school a last resort. So they say the state has tied our hands in terms of disciplining students. If the kids know, you can't toss them out. It's going to be a rough time. Folks, you're listening to the John DePietro Show. You're listening to the John DePietro Show. State Senator Jessica De La Cruz put out the following on the platform X, formerly known as Twitter. Today, my office filed an APRA request with the Rhode Island Department of Corrections. Find out how and why a Guatemalan national, an alleged child rapist, was released from ACI custody, disregarding a timely and lawful immigration detainer on the accused. She also put out, thankfully, Boston ICE apprehended the suspect, but how many of our most vulnerable were preyed on in the 10 months since the detainer was ignored? So access to public records, she has this up. State of Rhode Island, Office, Legal Counsel. I request the following documents, anything related to that. Would like it within 10 days. Senate Minority Leader Jessica De La Cruz. Now, granted, she posted this, or was posted for her, regardless, but nonetheless, it became public 15 hours ago. Let's check in with some of the media coverage on it. Now, I'm unaware if they sent out any type of press release on it. I mean, I picked up on her social media account, but let's just log on. Channel 10, 21st Anniversary Station Nightclub Fire. Rhode Island State Police made a history record drug and weapons bust. RIPT is going to hold meetings about route changes in Pawtucket. You had the guy that tried to robbery a bank in Swansea. That was interesting. They even had a U-Haul that then they burned, and they had a second vehicle, the switch car, that they made it into. But I don't see, and then you still have, I believe there's still Burrville Police is still looking for the guy that took off from them. And by all accounts, I think his name's Tyler Perry, they still have not located him. That guy needs to get an attorney and go surrender immediately for his own good. For my good, I hope he doesn't. And then I'm out there on the scene live stream when then they are able to catch up to him. But as I'm looking at this, I don't understand why No one's covering that. And it should be covered. It warrants coverage. I'll say that. I mean, I've been sometimes critical of the Republican lack of their response. I'd like to think that because I'm highlighting their reaction on things that that's maybe putting a little pressure on them. We do know there have been some problems at the ACI. But folks, one of the situations that comes into play that I have talked about is, as Terry Gorman mentioned yesterday, it started under Governor Chafee. It continued under Raimondo, and it's gone to another level under Governor McKee, and that is that Rhode Island officials coming from the office of the governor encourage different agencies not to cooperate with immigration, with ICE, immigration, custom enforcement. And so you say, how can they do that? They do it. Cicilline had different ways. Instead of just emailing various things, they would fax it over to them and they would fax certain information days later. Can you imagine, like, who in this day and age still uses fax machines? But the point is, I want to commend State Senator Jessica De La Cruz. She should be getting coverage on this. She is doing the right thing. The Republican Party needs to embrace this. The Republican Party stance in the past, for lack of a better phrase, but it's been a little mamby-pamby, and I don't understand. They're fearful. I actually do. I know the theory why they don't, and I'm telling you that it's, I believe it's a failed theory, and the theory is that they feel that they may lose the Hispanic vote if, in fact, they bring up the subject of illegal immigration. So they say, this has been the theory of the past few years, several years now. I fundamentally disagree with it, and I think it's failed. But they feel, well, we're not going to get votes in places like Providence, Pawtucket, Central Falls if you bring up the immigration issue. Here's the spoiler alert. You're not going to get votes there anyway, but you will get more votes outside of those areas. And I think they'd actually be surprised how many votes in those areas they get. This is my point with the Rhode Island Republican Party, of which the past few years, by the way, that's the first notion I've seen anyone take. I would hope that House Minority Leader Mike Chippendale might do this thing, same thing, and follow up as far as the House, unless, I don't know if they hand off and now it's just like a Senate thing. And I can understand that. I'm not criticizing that. I'm saying I don't know if he feels, well, I don't need to do it because she did it. But folks, I want to be very clear. I'm not trying to blame everything, all the problems in the state. I'm not trying to blame everything on illegal immigration. I'm not saying that. That's not part of it. It doesn't come into a lot of the problems that exist. My issue is when there's various problems that arise, it shouldn't be left out of the conversation because there are things that impacts, such as the amount of time that the emergency rooms at the hospital, the wait. Rhode Island is ranked 49th in the country. Median wait time of 4 hours if you go to an emergency room. I'm not saying the absolute cause is illegal immigration. I'm saying that when you're discussing that problem, it should at least, it warrants a mention. The problems in the schools, the expense of the schools, the failure of many of the schools. I'm not blaming that all on illegal immigration. I'm arguing at least it warrants a mention when you're talking about it. And it stands to reason. When you take a number of students and they're called multi-language learners, which means they don't speak English, of course it's going to throw off your scores. It's also going to throw off learning in the classroom if you have a number of students in the classroom that don't speak English. So I'm not saying it's the cause, but I'm saying it's not even mentioned when they're talking about some of the problems. The expense of education, it absolutely should be mentioned. Now, Dan McGowan has a piece in Roadmap that the amount of Providence teachers that are retiring and they're leaving. Providence needs to close some of the schools. The teachers' union's refusing to. You don't need all that space. Providence has some schools that they're only at 30 to 40% of occupancy. You don't need that. And therefore, you don't need all the staff. It's too, that John Hopkins report that talked about one of the problems in the Providence schools It's too adult-centric. Everything revolves around what's good for the adults. Nothing what's good for the children. You don't need all those schools. And on top of that, if people started to break it down and really started to realize how much it cost, and it's over, you know, it's over $100 million where we're educating children that are here illegally with their parents. But the teachers union feel, hey, as long as we have jobs, let the taxpayers pick it up. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show. You're listening to The John DePietro Show. Fallout continues to grow after the Russian opposition leader, the death, Putin had him killed. His widow accuses the Kremlin now of hiding the body. Martha Raddatz, I think she's excellent. Let's pick up her story.
Sources telling me this morning they are outgunned and outmanned by the Russians, but they will keep fighting this even as Vladimir Putin has now lost his fiercest critic.
This morning, the Russian government standing firm, refusing to turn over Alexei Navalny's body to his family. Navalny's mother posting a video this morning appealing to Putin to return his body to the family. She has been unable to see it. Navalny's widow, Yulia, claiming Russian authorities are trying to disguise the real cause of death, saying they are cowardly and meanly hiding his body, Yulia accusing Putin of killing her husband. These new images from an anti-Putin news outlet reportedly showing what may be the convoy transferring Navalny's remains from prison, although the video could not be independently verified. Putin's fiercest critic had been facing a decades-long prison sentence for extremism and other charges, which his supporters say were fabricated. His death drawing global condemnation, President Biden directly blaming Vladimir Putin and weighing a response.
We already have sanctions, but we're considering additional sanctions.
This as Ukrainian forces withdraw from the city of Avdiivka, with Russia claiming its biggest battlefield gain in months. Russian state media showing troops within the destroyed city's limits, one Ukrainian commander saying that they did not have enough manpower or shells to hold off the Russian assault. We went inside a hospital in Dnipro, which has been treating scores of Ukrainian casualties from the months-long battle. American neurosurgeon Dr. Rocco Armonda previously served as a doctor for the U.S. Army in Iraq and Afghanistan, but now he's volunteered here in Ukraine for the second time.
The most severe of penetrating brain injuries, penetrating neck injuries, polytrauma injuries, you know, and they're victims basically of artillery.
Now with crucial U.S. aid halted in Congress, Biden slamming House Republicans, but saying he is willing to meet with Speaker Johnson.
The way they're walking away from the threat of Russia, the way they're walking away from NATO, the way they're walking away from meeting our obligations, it's just shocking.
And soldiers telling me this morning this aid is imperative or even more lives will be lost. Robin?
Listen, Putin's got to go. I can't, but they got to kill him. Look how he's totally out of control. And I think it's even more embarrassing that maybe he was empowered after, you know, the interview with Tucker Carlson. This is absolutely getting insanity. Now, closer to home, Patriots' Matthew Slater has announced his retirement. He seemed to be just a very beloved member of the Patriots, very valuable person for the franchise. So at some point, I know that has nothing to do with Putin, but at some point we would think that we would have some positive news. But the situation right now with Russia in Ukraine, there is definitely, you can't deny that there is a, without question, there is definitely a Putin, as they describe it, a Putin wing of the Republican Party, and I'm not sure what to make of it. So I want to see, there's a piece, are you upset with our choice of narcissist grandpa versus basement grandpa? Is this on TikTok, I think? Let me hear this.
Got us to basement grandpa versus narcissist grandpa 1.0 and now 2.0. When Trump famously said they're not sending their best, he was actually referring to the pipeline for American politicians.
When sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're not sending you. They're not sending you. They're sending people that have lots of problems, and they're bringing those problems with us. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people.
No one with any great professional success wants to run for higher office these days. Yeah, you become reduced to either being a baby-killing communist pervert or a racist Nazi trying to imprison rape victims.
All right. It's more of a visual. My apologies, folks. It was different. I thought I would try to run it, but there's only so much of this I can listen to. But the heat continues on Putin, though.
Critic, new protests erupting, and Alexei Navalny's widow, she's now speaking out, vowing to carry on her husband's legacy. NBC's chief foreign correspondent Richard Engel is in Ukraine. He's got that story for us. Hey, Richard, good morning.
Good morning, Hoda. And now we are hearing a direct response from Vladimir Putin's spokesman to those comments from Alexei Navalny's widow, specifically her allegation that her late husband was assassinated by the Kremlin. Putin's spokesman called that charge unfounded and, quote, obnoxious.
Accusations are growing this morning about the death in prison last week of Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny. President Biden has said President Putin is responsible for Navalny's death and says the U.S. may impose more penalties on Russia.
We're considering additional sanctions, yes.
This morning, Navalny's mother urging President Putin to release her son's body for burial. Navalny's widow, Yulia, adding, "We will find out exactly how this crime was carried out." Navalny's allies in the Russian opposition, working to uncover more, are already releasing their own narrative about Russia's actions. A human rights group says Russian intelligence officers visited the prison 2 days before Navalny's death to disconnect cameras and listening devices, and that a medical examiner was instructed to list bruises on Navalny's body as coming after death. The Russian opposition newspaper Novaya Gazeta Europe reports that prisoners were locked in their cells the night before Navalny died, followed by a surprise inspection the next morning. NBC News cannot confirm those allegations, which were attributed to anonymous sources. Across the border, Ukraine's President Zelensky visited the front line and urgently called for more weapons to stop Russia's advance in eastern Ukraine. Much of the east now looks right out of World War II, with Ukrainian villages smashed by Russian artillery and largely abandoned, except for military vehicles and troops. At one of the only schools we found still operating, 10-year-old Daria told us she's hearing more explosions now than before.
Are the Russians getting closer?
When I go outside, I hear the explosions are coming closer, so it means they are coming closer and closer, she says.
You know, this man, the protests, everything, the uprising, something's gotta happen over there in Russia, and we need to help them any way we can. Folks, you're listening to The John DePietro Show.